Welcome to The Wise Fool. I'm Matthew Doles, your host. Today my guests are Louise Beer and Elena Onyshenko of PragueArtworks.com, an online art consulting firm based in Prague, Czech Republic. In our discussion, we touch on installment plans for the purchasing of art, studio envy, commissions, professionalism, addiction, and certificates of authenticity.
So, I'm Louise Beer. I'm the founder of Prague Artworks, and I'm with...
My name is Elena Onyshenko. It's pronounced with S-H. And we're working with Louise on several projects.
And we are an online gallery, and we started with... I would say when we started a few years ago, we were about 7 artists, and now it's grown to over 60 artists in many mediums. I would say that we're doing from painting to sculpture to glassmaking to
installations as well, and we don't show it, yes, but exactly. We know the artist who does.
This particular company, Prague Artworks, began when?
It began 3 years ago. We've been actively doing pop-up exhibitions for the last 2 years, I would say. And we have done about 3 a year. And between Art Prague and our own pop-ups, it's been... quite successful. We have seen something because we have a niche market that we have worked on, which is with an expat community in Prague, international community, French community, and with a diplomatic community as well. So combined together with in the mix with some business people and of course some of the Czech community, we've been able to bring a new awareness, I would say, to Prague.
Yes, it's different approach to the selling of art in a way in Prague, because there are galleries here, there are individual artists, but we combine the artists together and show them together, because there are no such thing as group exhibitions here where you can buy.
I've seen
except art, yeah, where?
At galleries.
Galleries. Yes, yeah. So it's different business. So we do it because our prices are cheaper because we don't take that much commission as a gallery do.
Okay, so what is your commission structure? What's your relationship?
Well, because we are not, we've been very privileged not to pay for the space. We are actually, what we're doing is we're trying to keep it as low as possible. So we try and cover our expenses, and that's basically what we're doing. So it's really, we're really there for the artists. It's, I know it's like, I don't want to say, you know, we're making a bit of money, but we're not taking 50%.
Yeah, that's really what I was getting at. So, yes, so it's not a 50-50 split.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard there's been a number of other things that have been told to me recently, as far as even like some galleries will buy artworks outright and then resell the artworks at basically whatever price they choose, which is a very interesting dynamic. I'd never really heard of that before. So 50-50, 60-40, 70-30, all the way to buying outrights. I mean, I've heard the whole spectrum already. So you all fall within where? What do you choose to do? Is it different? Is each artist different?
No, it's basically the same, but it's not, just put it this way, we're not taking a lot. So, because I don't want to say something for the artists, but we're helping them as much as possible. So,
okay, fair enough. Yes. There's certain things that are still trade secrets.
Confidential information. Okay.
All right. Well, within that, how about the idea of like exclusivity versus non-exclusivity?
Well, it doesn't exist, does it? No.
Even now, what we try to do, that the last exhibition we had, we demand in a way, or we ask artists for the piece 3 months exclusivity. But since we don't store the art in our places, so we don't know what artist does with this, with the piece. We could not control it. So we say it on a paper, and if the information will get to us somehow, someone will buy who we know, then we can claim it. But other than this, it's untrackable, unfortunately. So there is exclusivity, but there is no exclusivity, you know?
Does that make you feel?
Well, you know, we work hard at what we're doing, and it's a very hard, I think that piercing the Czech market when you're an expat and don't speak Czech. Well, Elena speaks Czech, but I don't.
And neither do I.
And I think that in my case, I think that it makes it different because there's maybe a lot of nuances that I don't get, and I'm driving my own bus, if you want, and I'm not looking at the others because I can't compare myself to the others because I'm not Czech. So that's my first way, is that I'm just going. And when we started this online gallery platform, because then we brought our website really up to speed. We spent a lot of money on it. We use it a lot as a tool.
And I've seen you do a lot of like online videos.
Yes, and we do as much as we move that. We try and use that as much as possible. Last year, actually, we had our whole website on a continuous video so that we could showcase all our artists. And we had benches like in a museum so people could sit down and actually watch all the pieces. So, and that we got a lot of very positive feedback. So we're using that as we are like all the other social media that Elena is in charge of, I would say. And it's her mirror. So
well, I mean, that's a great thing, that a topic that I keep asking people about and that I keep wondering about, because I've had my own successes and my own failures with social media. And so I'm always wondering, like, how well does it really work for you? Like, you know, A, on the one hand, like, how much time do you actually have to put into it? And B, does the positive actually become a net? Like, do you actually get enough of a positive response from social media to make all of the time and effort that's put into it worth it?
It's a good question. I mean, I think it's too soon to tell. But for instance, last week we got somebody from Los Angeles that found us on social media, bought a painting, and I don't think that we would have had him otherwise if he hadn't seen the website. If you're clicking, I don't know, art galleries or whatever it was. So I don't know how. I still don't know how.
I don't know the feedback.
Of knowing how quick Prague Artworks actually comes onto,
you can pay people to tell you this
yes,
stuff.
Yes, like, yes, you know, yes, yes, yes. Well, we're not there yet, but the fact is that yes, we are getting. I'm not saying that we're getting them every week, but it's there, and that people that actually that we know that we see in town that, and they're like, oh my God, you guys are so busy. We always get this feedback. Very positive feedback.
Well, there's this sensibility in this region. I feel like my wife is Czech, and I feel like this is, and she keeps saying this kind of thing to me about like being humble and not like drawing too much attention to yourself.
Yes, because people are getting jealous.
People end up getting jealous. Yeah, I mean, this is a very much a cultural thing. And basically, like, when I feel like the idea is like, if you go out here and do a lot of things and draw a lot of attention to yourself, that a lot of the people in this culture don't like that. Is that true?
Probably they don't, but we when they don't like it, we try to be even more active, you know? Yes.
So, but why don't they like it? Where does that even come from?
Well,
like,
maybe we're stepping on people's toes. Yeah. Maybe we're disrupting. We don't know, but I'm sure that we're doing things that have never been done. Before
in Prague,
yes.
Like, I've seen things like this.
No, of course. But you know, to have a sponsor such as ours, like Emo Finance, that actually will give us the space, and now we're going into
3,000 square meters.
So that's 30,000 square feet. That's a lot. That's huge.
And they also support us with the reception and, you know, media and
So you have some sponsor.
Yes.
Who is this? tell us, how did you get a sponsor? I mean, part of this whole idea of this podcast is basically trying to see, like, different ways that people have either failed or succeeded as assistance, as advice, as input on, like, how could we all make
everybody wants that $1 million question.
Absolutely.
Of how. But I have to say that I have been extremely lucky in meeting very nice artists that I get along with. I think I spoke to you about this last week, that, you know, that I have you have a human connection. It's not just something like, okay, I'm coming into your gallery, I'm going to pick this, and, you know, for the next show. Elena's exactly like that. Like, we need some kind of connection. And these are with the artists that we're working with. So that's like the first thing. Our collectors are all people we know well. I don't, like, strangely enough, we don't have a network of people we don't know.
we start getting to know people, you know, like, but it's 3-4 people who are actually outsiders.
Okay.
Outside of the net. Everybody that buys from us, we know. Mm-hmm. So that's already another strange factor, because it's, I don't want to say strange, but it's, you know, it's in a comfortable realm.
Oh, no, I do reviews online for a thing called Lens Culture, photographers thing. And people are constantly saying, how do I sell more? How do I connect more? How do I get more sales? And I always tell them, it's go out and meet people.
That's
You have to be at the events. Socialize. They have to meet you. But I mean, like, more sales are done with handshake than any amount of emails or social media. Still,
of course,
in this day. So, like, you have to put in the FaceTime and the glad handing, basically, to make the sales and make the connections, make that personal connection.
Exactly, like, has to be very human, I think, and I think that we really have that. So I would say, I don't want to say over anybody else. I'm not comparing myself to anybody. I'm just saying, with us, we're very happy. I like the way that it's going. I like the idea of working with an older generation of Czechs that are women and men that were under communism, that had hard times, that when we call a ceramist and say to Sharka, would you like to join us? I mean, this lady's nearly crying to be so honored to be part of our show. I mean, it's and it shouldn't be, because she's so extraordinary. And the same with the other people of that generation in their 70s. You just think, my gosh. And then, of course, this emerging new artists. Well, they're happy because they
need exposure.
They need exposure.
We all need exposure. Yes, like, yes, I mean, yes. I don't think I've ever met a single artist at any level of their career that where they're like, no, I really don't need more exposure.
But on the other hand, you give them exposure, and sometimes they're not happy with the exposure.
Yes, because they're not happy where they are. Yes, they don't want to be next to this artist. Next, so you have that kind of ego because everybody has. So it's trying to work that out as well. But that, for me, is a small, it's not even an issue, really. The issue is, you know, bringing their pieces, trying to sell them. And, you know, when we do a pop-up, And that for me is what's important. And the team that works, you know, because it's a whole team, you know, from the driver that picks up the, you know, the pieces to the guy that's installing that we have that's so extraordinary. I mean, this guy could be in a museum, you know, he's just so precise that it's just such a joy to have somebody like this on our, like, you know, on board with us. So things like that, and Elena, like all this social media and everything that goes with
administrative work, yes, and yes,
accounting, and you know, as you know, all of that, you know, it's a heavy load once you sell something, but then you've got all the aftermath.
Oh yeah, I mean the thing that a lot of people don't understand, because like, I mean, I've worked in museums, I've worked in galleries, I've also been an artist, been in academia, I've done lots of crazy things. But the one thing is, it's about relationships. It's about long-term relationships. Like, I mean, you know, being around for a couple of years here, a couple of years there, it's almost not enough. Like, I realized recently that, like, one of the reasons why, like, let's say for me, I haven't been able to build my career substantially better than I have been able to, is because I have been moving constantly.
Yes.
So, like, I keep moving every 2 or 3 years to a new job or a new school, yes, or whatever I have to do to make a living. And by doing so, I'm actually sort of biting myself in the ass, because I'm not there to be building the relationships of the people, be it the galleries, be it the collectors, be it the whoever, because everybody wants to see the person. It's going, yes, back to like glad handing and being out there, yes, at the parties and stuff. And, you know, when people see you, they remember that they want to buy your work. When they don't see you, they're like, they sort of forget about you. So,
yes, they, yes, see someone else.
Yeah, and they see somebody else, yes, more often. And so then they want to buy that person's work. So like, a lot of it all is really just about making sure that you're in the in front of the people, basically. Mm.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you build your position on the market.
Yeah, and it takes, I mean, and this is like a lot of our young artists are always thinking like, oh, I've been doing this for a year. I've been out of school for a year. I should be in a gallery. And I'm like, not really. Like, there's no obligation for that an artist is so spectacular walking out of school. Like, looking back on my own career, like, if a gallery had picked me up after 1 year after graduation, that would have been horrible. Like,
yes,
I was making crap work.
Yes.
Like,
it was just like, yes.
I mean, no, but like, now, yeah, okay, I think I could do a gallery. Like, now I'm a bit more mature, yes, about it. My work is a bit more mature. And like, so like, a lot of these young artists think that the, you know, stardom and sales and all these kinds of things should be happening within a year to 2 years after graduation, or not, sometimes not even going to school, and they just think, yes, because they're talented that they should be getting all these things. But it's not true.
No, but I think one of the great advantages of Prague and the Czech Republic is that you have these schools. There are schools like UMPROM, that is a 6-year program, and most of the artists that we've dealt with are graduates of this school.
That's a great school. So, and it's free for Czech citizens.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah, it sucks for me.
Yes,
great,
yes,
for them.
Yes. It's so that's one of the great things with these emerging new this new generation of artists, and that they have a chance to go to school, to have good teachers. I mean, this is
mentors,
way, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And that they can make a living being an artist. It's not
can they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I mean, yes, you know, it's not normal.
No.
In the rest of the world.
No, it isn't. But here, wouldn't you agree?
Okay, maybe not living 100%, no, no, yes, but...
But the older ones that we know, even the middle...
The older, yes.
And the guys that we know that are in their 40s, 50s, they live off their art. Mm. So they don't have a second job. So
they have some projects as well, you, yes, know, like, but still connected to their art, like David, let's, yes, say, yes.
Or, but, you know, we look at Dan Trantina now. He's at Docks this week. He's got 3 rooms at the... I mean, you just want to kiss him and hug him and say, you know, bravo, because it's so fantastic. And with his partner, Peter Moitika, and he's in LA, and they work together on each piece, and they're like a duo. And I mean, you know, we're so happy to see this success, and they're guys in their late 40s, early 50s, and it's
that's my generation.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
So, and that's what you wish for everybody, really.
Well,
you
know, and that's the idea of this podcast is to try and share some information so that every, you know, like when tides rise, all boats kind of thing go up with it. Kind of, so like if everybody gets a little bit more knowledge, then we all will be doing a little bit better.
And of course the $1 million, like again, I say the $1 million question is everybody's that's starting or that says, well, you know, I want to buy a piece of art because I want it to, I'm buying it as an investment and I want, and I'm like, you know, so many, we've heard so many people that are like, oh yes, you've got to buy this because of it's going to make so much money. Nobody has a crystal ball, you know. Nobody has a crystal ball, but you know, you got to go with your gut feeling. You've got to go with something that you like. This is, you know, I started collecting art as you know, I was 23 years old.
I don't know. Please share for the listening public.
Yeah, so you know, I was, you know, out of hotel school, you know, making, I want to say.
Wait, hotel school?
Yeah, hotel management. I graduated in hotel.
Okay. Yes, I'm like thinking a school and a hotel.
Oh, no, hotel management. Okay. I went to hotel management school. And when I graduated, of course, working in the hotel business, well, you know, you're making a okay salary, but you know, if I look back 30 years ago, in the early 80s, I don't know, was it the 80s? I don't know how many years ago.
That's almost 40 years.
Yeah, 40 years. But you know, when I started and you know, making, I don't know, $25,000 a year, which was probably not a bad salary to start off with, well, but I just think that I had been advised by one of my friend's mother that owned a gallery to start collecting art, and she put me on an installment plan, and I was every month paying her, and I have to say that this was the best thing that ever happened to me, because year by year by year I was buying, and then the minute I started having a little bit more money, I was buying two pieces, and then it was three pieces, and I was I guess for my whole life, like, you know, for probably a good 10, 15 years, I was on an installment plan because the pieces got bigger and bigger.
Sure, and the prices got higher and higher.
More expensive and more expensive.
And, you know, being from Canada, most of the pieces that I was buying were in US. So, and the exchange rate then was huge. So I remember going to the bank and like, well, if you had to pay $1,000, I was putting $1,000 up. Well, that was costing you 1,800 Canadian. So it was, so at the end, I just remember the most expensive piece then, I think it was probably 1986 or 87. I paid Tom Westelman this piece, it was $7,500 US, and I thought, how, and I just remember, like, I came home and I thought, I've got to get this piece, but I'm like, how am I ever gonna pay it? But you know, a year later it was paid.
And that's something a lot of potential buyers don't even realize, like, they walk in, they see a piece that's $10,000, $5,000, and they're like, I don't have $5,000.
No.
Like, period.
Yes,
like,
yes, I don't, period, exactly.
Like, I just don't have it. But they never even inquire to say, like, hey, can I pay this on an installment plan?
And or all our artists, like, actually, you know, last week, actually, we had two young girls that that are buying, and they will have an installment plan. And we've told them, look, you know, and the artist is so happy. So hot, sure. Like, I can't even tell you. He's so happy to help these kids, these young collectors that are in their early 20s, and you know, mid 20s, and you know,
yes, it's actually what we were thinking and we are planning to do here is to teach young generation to collect art.
Great,
because the people are afraid. And you know, they, because they say, exactly, they come to exhibition, they say, how much is this? Oh, $100,000, so $4,000. Oh no, I don't have it. So, and if you say, look, okay, pay it in four times, pay it in five times, it's okay. But you know, you will have a collection, because everyone wants art at home. Especially in Czech Republic, people like art and they like, you know, go to museums, and so they have this culture,
talk
but
to
they're
my
afraid.
Wife.
Yeah, but they, you're here, the Czechs are raised, for instance, as a young age. Like we think of our, like my daughter, our daughter, when she was in the French school here, they go to the theater.
Yes.
And they go and see everything, every...
Absolutely, yeah. The theater play, community here is massive.
And I mean, it's in the culture since you're very young. So continue that, your whole upbringing So the arts are there.
I saw some recent statistics that said there are like 300 theater companies in Prague alone.
Oh, yes.
And I was just like, oh my God,
insane. So that is in their culture.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the same should be, like, I want to say collecting art, because what happens is that you have young couples that are married with a kid and they've just bought an apartment and they've just spent 9 million crowns or 11 or 12 million. And then they say, I don't have any money.
That's right. They go to IKEA and buy some crap stuff just to cover the walls and make it look hospitable.
And so that's why, like, every show, we're trying to have pieces that are
nothing personal to artists that work with IKEA. I'm sure there are some lovely works in there, but as a general whole, that's my position.
Yes.
It's usually, it's not original. This is the problem. It's usually prints, or some.
I'm a photographer in my background. I'm fine with prints. Like I'm okay with works on paper, so I'm not going to knock that. But there are some very bad works at IKEA. There are, but recently they've been doing some nice things where they do limited edition run partnerships with artists. I mean, of course, their limited edition are like 5 million, but still, I mean, they I will say IKEA has been doing better to get more creative, but it's still, you know, big box store artwork. It's nothing unique or special.
And I think here, because there are IKEA. so many artists.
I'm never going to get IKEA as a sponsor.
No, but there are so many artists of every genre here. And, you know, you in Prague alone, but you go out of Prague, and it's like, it's a strange thing to say, but Czechs, they love to go mushroom hunting. And
I know that.
Yes, it's a big passion. And they collect hundreds of mushrooms. And I think it's like the artist. There's, you know, everywhere you go, you hear of this name, that name, and there's hundreds that you don't know about. And you know, and they were maybe known at a certain time, and then because of communism, because of whatever, they let their things go. And I mean, we go into some of these studios. I mean, it's like the trove of Alibaba sometimes. I mean, it's just absolutely...
I've seen some of the videos of you all going into... I mean, the one thing that always astounds me when particularly your videos, those studios are huge.
Some of them.
Where are these studios? Yeah, yes. And how much do they pay in rent? Because there is no way that those are cheap, because those are massive.
A lot of them actually have sponsors.
How do you... Slow down here.
But you know,
I'm an artist. I'm here. No, how do I get a sponsor to get me a big studio like that?
But some... some of them are working. They have extraordinary collectors that are helping them. We have other artists that are very, very well known and have small studios. So it's
But I'm looking for a big studio. Where do I get the sponsors? Where do they come from? I know I can't go to the municipality because you have to be a Czech citizen for that.
Yes.
Yeah, this is what happens with older artists, let's say. They have a lot of places from municipality, like Suvaik. So giving them in the past. Now, the only thing is that a lot of artists who came here, they're struggling with the space. But you can go to Pragovka.
I know Pragovka, yeah.
So they rent studios.
It's very expensive, though.
It is, yes.
Like, my rent on my apartment with my wife and three cats is cheaper than the cheapest studio at Pragovka.
Yes, yes. This is...
Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Pragovka is great. I love it. I'm a huge fan of it. I hope it gets very successful. But
I know what you're saying.
They've already outpriced artists to me.
It's all connections.
It's connections, yes.
You know, and this is the thing.
Well, I heard a recent story about Pragovka that says that actually they're downsizing. They're getting ready to renovate part of it, and so therefore they're actually getting rid of a number of artists, and they're going to be only limiting the number of artists. So the potential of getting a studio there is actually probably going lower, and probably the costs of the studios are going to be going up because they now are going to renovate part of it, so therefore it's more desirable. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's the stereotypical same story as like every major metropolitan city. First, the artists go into an old rundown neighborhood, then the homosexuals move into the rundown neighborhood, and then all of a sudden it becomes gentrified and attractive to live there. And then people come in, and it gets really expensive, and then neither artist nor homosexual can live there anymore.
No,
because we can't afford it. Because that's what we need. Like we like the cheap places.
Well, of course. But here, there's still opportunities. There are still opportunities. But, you know, I've been here since 2002. And I can tell you it's a very, very difficult market to drill a hole in.
In the
sense of it takes time. You think you know a lot of people, but at the end, we do know, but in a certain world. The galleries here, I mean, I have a lot of gallerists that I have as friends, the same with museums, the same, and, you know, and thankfully I have these certain connections with certain people. But the fact is that, it's a Czech market, and I'm not Czech. So, you know, I'll always have that. But at the same time, I'll say, and because I'm a very positive person, I always see the good. And I see that the way that I've done business so far, well, it's worked for me.
Well, but and not to sound like this is some cunning plan on your part, but you were smart enough to partner with somebody who is more regional than you are, with Yelena.
Yes, but we have a very fantastic story because we have a common friend that lives in London, Jennifer Potter, that has known me. She has a Czech husband and lived here for many, many years. And when I had an exhibition a few years ago in London, she helped me, and she always kept talking about Alena. And we were like, okay, well, and I think she was like, oh yeah, well, whatever. I was like, okay, yes, whatever. Yes. And she really kept at it.
Yes. She pushed us to it.
So she pushed us. And actually, we just went now, the last 2 days, we were in London to visit her. Mm-hmm. So it was...
it's a good business move for you.
We complement each other very well because Elena has an MBA. She's very, very
necessary in the arts. This is one of my big pet peeves because, okay, I work in academia and I'm constantly teaching young artists how to create works. But the one thing that I feel like nobody walks out of school with or any abilities is how to run the business of the arts. They do not know how to price their work, do contracts, sign anything, taxes. Like, they don't understand any of that kind of stuff. And so, like, artists and even creative-minded people generally oftentimes need a balancer in their relationship, their life, whatever, that is somebody who's more business-minded.
We said we were in the party together, and one guy says, you know, that I do the thing, but, you know, I have someone who is my hard drive. So I said, yes, Louise is, you know, PC, and I'm her hard drive. Because she's great with connecting with people. She's great with keeping social and everything. And I'm good in other things, you know, being home, doing stuff, and, you know, have some ideas and everything. So
yes, we complement each other very well.
So what she does, I could not do. And what I do, she could not do.
No.
So that's why we are, you know...
A good team.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's worked. But you need to find that. And for us, well, I don't want to say, but it just...
It happened. It
happened.
We clicked.
Yes, it happened. It came in our laps because it's like... and our working relationship is easy. And we have a good...
Well, this is something that a lot of artists need, like business managers.
Well, this is what we're trying to do with a lot of them, in the sense of it's not like it's selling the art, but it's as well... Because when you have a relationship with an artist, it's much more. Because when you've sold something, I mean, you've got to send it away. Like, if they're not living here, it's got to be sent by Spedia. You've got the customs to look after, the pickup, the invoicing, the all of that. A lot of them couldn't, they don't know, like, you know, as far as they're concerned, is like, just give me the cash and I'm out, you know?
This is a check way, yes.
See, it's funny. I'm from the world where, like, I worked at the gallery, so I know all about having to crate up and do all this kind of stuff. So I'm like, I'm always surprised when artists don't know how much work and effort galleries put into making, completing a sale. So, like, it's not even just making the sale, but it's completing the sale, like, doing everything. And then, you know, the
follow-up,
the taxes, the everything else. I mean, even potentially, you know, paying to have somebody go and install it for them as well.
Yes,
because a lot of the people that buy these more expensive pieces, they don't want to be responsible to install it in their homes or their offices.
No, we've had that to do but it's a big, big, big job. And I think the after sale of, I mean, recently last week I was at a collector's home to see a sculpture that was tailor-made for their backyard and to go and see what it looked like. But I mean, it was so magnificent. But at the same time, thankfully, the sculptor is... I want to say he has an engineer's mind in a way. So with the lighting, because, you know, they wanted to have lighting but it's not everybody that has that gift, I would say.
Well, I mean, that's where it goes back. Okay, so let's go back a little bit of a step. So, like, how do you choose your artists? Because, I mean, like, I've had conversations over the past decades with various different gallery owners and stuff, and it's always like, you know, little things like, There's the fabulous savant of an artist that just makes amazing work, but might be a horrible pain in the ass to work with on a professional level. You know, or they might be a drug addict or a drunk or a whatever. They might be in legal troubles. I mean, I've known...
We've had them all.
Yeah, I mean, I've known artists that have been in prison.
We've had them all. But we try to stay open-minded. I would say that would be the first thing, but... I don't like conflict, and
I believe that.
And I like to be with somebody that I have a trust, and that I have some kind of, you know, feeling that I can call. But I don't want to call somebody and they call me back 3 days later. I'm not interested in that. Neither of us. With a few exceptions, the artists that we're working with, you call them. They'll call you back unless they're traveling or there's something. You'll get an email. But if I'm calling you for something specific, I have a client that wants something, call me back. You know, this is...
That just seems professional.
Yeah, but it's not always... So to come back to the drug addict, to the... You know, we've had the
alcoholic... Don't knock drug addicts. I'm an ex-drug addict.
Yeah, okay. No,
be
but
careful.
I know. But, you know... We have some serious problems.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm telling you, some serious alcoholism here is rampant. So
that's the whole culture. That has nothing to do with being an artist.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, we can go to a studio in the morning.
Sorry, don't take it personally, Prof.
But we have some artists that you go early in the morning. I mean, you're meeting somebody at 10 in the morning and they're already, well, they haven't either gone to bed or...
Yes.
But I know artists, like I had a friend of mine, Dick, that I went to grad school with. Hi, Dick. Love you, Dick. he made magnificent paintings when he was drunk. But trying to make paintings when he was sober.
Paintings.
No, not psychedelic. No, he actually, I mean, it was based on jazz and musical scores and things like that. But magnificent paintings. But when he was drunk, when he was sober... Nah, not quite as good paintings. Like, and it was a very interesting dynamic that sometimes some sort of, we'll call it social lubrication, relaxation, you know, getting your clothes, you know, making your mind more free, whatever, is sometimes necessary. Like, I once had a student who actually came to me and said, so I've been looking through the history of art and I'm looking at like Salvador Dali and a bunch of these other artists. And I'm wondering, is it necessary to be an alcoholic or a drug addict to make good art? And I kind of wanted to say yes, like or mental instability or something like.
Well, there is something
creative people to a certain extent need to see things differently in some way. Whatever methodology they take for that. But it's pretty...
No, but when you have a business meeting, I mean, you can, in your studio, you can get drunk, you know, paint, you can smoke, whatever. But when art dealers come into you and says, look, I want to represent you, and you say, oh, 10 o'clock in the morning, let's drink to it, you know, half bottle of Fernet.
Slivovitzy. And
yes, it's not...
it's hard.
They don't divide the professional side of their work and... whatever you do in the studio stays in the studio.
Well, and that's what I'm going back to about, like, artists are trained to create and be creative and be, you know, push the bounds of things, whatever it is, even push the limits of, like, alcoholism or drug use or whatever. But, like, they enjoy pushing these things. But they, and a lot of them, and I'm possibly myself included, like, have a massive difficulty with the business side of it. Like, just,
yes.
It could be separating it. It could be being professional. I mean, I think at this point I'm pretty professional, but I'm not sure if that's, you know, whatever, good or not good at this point for me. But like that disconnect between, like, their creative personality and their business life. A lot of them seem to have difficulty with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we had a show 2 years ago where I had two artists that got, I mean, I thought they'd have to go to the hospital and get their stomachs pumped. They were so drunk. And, like, really, and what are you going to do? Like, it's, they just laughed it off and, you know.
Another Thursday.
It's another, yes, exactly.
And you see, because this, the opening in the past, what we were doing, we had artists and the customers, you know, your clients. And this, probably when the clients see this, not everyone knows about artists. They like art, but when they see that this person who are lying down in the corner created this art, they say, strange, you know? Yeah. So,
like, it's, and
we know artists, but
right,
because we're dealing with business people, for instance, it's at another level. The people that are coming are in the community, but they're working. I want to say they're so it's not like if you go to another gallery that you have friends of an artist. We don't want their friends. I say, look, they can come another time during the week, whatever, anytime. But during an opening, we want to keep it to collectors. We want to keep it to potential buyers.
Professional in a way, yes.
Yeah.
So
you've run into the scenario that, like, I've talked about with other people before about, which is that you sometimes it happens where you will actively not involve the artist in sales. Basically, like, if somebody falls in love with the art piece and they say, I want to meet the artist, that you might have to go, yeah, that's not a good idea.
Mm. Well, or he's unavailable at the moment.
Yeah, yes. Yes. I mean, in a politically correct way, you would say, like, basically.
No, because it's, what's the point, you know? And I have some pieces of art that I should have, you know, that I've bought, but going to a vernissage 25 years or 30 years ago that I bought, and I'm thinking, that artist, I remember him, and he wasn't a nice person. and I'm thinking, I had the, you know, I bought the art, but do you really, like, you have
you
this,
don't want to connect it.
You don't want to connect it. And sometimes you just like this piece. I'm not interested in knowing, I know who it is, so-and-so, but it's not necessary, because I know it's strange, because every artist has a big ego and they want to be like, okay, it's coming into your house, it's coming into... And that, you're proud of that, because so many artists here are not driven by money. This is another thing, another factor that we find they're just, it's not a motivation like in other countries where you say, I would say,
Yes.
There's not a motivation.
Please elaborate.
Mm-hmm.
What motivates artists in this region?
Maybe some kind of, because there are so many artists here, so maybe every artist is trying to fit in the artist community. Because what happens in artist community, they secretly don't like each other.
Oh, it's not and secret. No, no, okay, they yes, openly they, don't yeah, like each yeah, other. No.
Also, but, you know, so they try and always to be, look, ah, this gallery invited me. And usually we're talking about galleries like state galleries. So you don't sell there. You just expose yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to be part of some group exhibition and say, look, I was there. Or, you know, I was in docks. I was in...
Well, it's like, I mean, I've always said that basically, like, the arts is one of the most difficult industries to be working in, because like literally from the moment you enter the arts world, everybody is looking forward to you fail.
Yes.
Like that's it. Nobody will support you. So I don't care if you're a gallerist or whether you're an artist, absolutely nobody wants you to, I mean, okay, sure, close family and friends, fine,
yes, they want yes,
you
to, yes.
But outside
yes.
of them,
yes,
nobody else in the industry is cares about your success, will help you with your success, or in any way supports you. They're just waiting for you to fail so that they can pick up whatever the pieces of what, you know, so like if an artist fails, then somebody can buy their work cheap and then turn around and sell it for more later. If a gallery fails, that just means that another gallery can come in and swoop up your artist that you just now lost, and yes. they can add to their roster. I mean, everybody wants you to fail.
Jungle.
It's horrible. Like,
but I think to come back to the artists that are not motivated. I mean, we have another artist. If he doesn't meet the person and has this rapport, he does not. They don't want to sell to anybody that's just willing to pay the money. It has to go into a good home. Are the
really?
Words? Yes.
Like babies. Like,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this piece of art is my baby, and I want to make sure it goes into a good home.
So some artists would actually feel this way. They have
absolutely.
This attachment to
yes,
it.
Yes, a great attachment. And I've had people like, I mean, there's...
Do they ask for like a home inspection and be like...
Well, they'll go for sure, because they'll see which wall it's going to go on.
Really?
And yes.
Before
yes.
they even allow
yes.
it to be sold.
Yes.
That.
Yes. So it's not
I'm not sure if that is the most cunning business thing I've ever heard, or ridiculous.
No, I think it's really from the bottom of their heart.
I know, but like yes. in some ways that
it's
sounds
so naive, like
it's almost like so childlike and like and it's almost admirable in a way.
Yes,
like it's like
it is
because like now by doing that you have then made the people who are buying it feel like the artwork is even then exponentially more precious.
Absolutely.
Than
Absolutely.
If they had just paid money for it
yes.
and walked away.
Well, that's another element, if you want. And that's another part of working and being in Prague, because
yes,
you would say
yes.
a lot of the artists that we work with, I mean, it's been like that.
And, you know, knowing Louise, let's say every show was usually this pop-up we have. Usually it's quite successful. Every artist knows it. And so you would expect that artists we approach would give you the best piece they have, so they sell it. No, they give you the garbage sometimes. Yes. They give you some pieces from 92, which they have stored. And the good pieces they would give to Gallery in Ostrava.
So we're changing that a little bit, you know, but it's so
it has no, that's why you say that
no
they're
logic.
Not driven by money, because if you're driven by money, you say,
you
okay,
put your
show
best work
coming.
Out always.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Two best works, and we're asking for two pieces usually. So give your best or make it, you know, right away.
But they would actively choose not to put their best work out.
They don't care. This is the thing. They would rather be in Ostrava because it's Ostrava and this gallery invited them. And they give the piece there. Then
so now the last show we had in February, we only had 8 artists compared to the last one that we had 38 artists. And, you know...
That sounds like a lot of finagling.
But what was great is that then we asked for new pieces. We said it's a Valentine edition. And of course, that whole idea is new here a little bit, you know, because...
Themed exhibitions kind
theme,
of thing.
But to think... Because when I was growing up, I don't know, my parents always bought me something for Valentine's. So I was telling like young Czechs, like, you know, well, if you're newly married, maybe your husband will buy you a small piece of art, or maybe, you know, like this idea.
Interesting you say that, actually, because like I grew up in a household where my parents, my father's a painter at this point. He's a minister, a reverend, whatever you But he studied painting, and when they got married, they made an agreement that every year for their anniversary, they buy a piece of art.
Oh, well, you see how beautiful.
And so
yeah.
that's what they ended up, they now have this massive collection. collection. You know,
And they still go on, huh? Buying.
They have Chagalls and Calders, and they have a Chagall that they bought as a it's a print. It's nothing special, but like it's a print that they bought for $6.
Oh my gosh.
Back in 1964.
Yes. Well, yes, wow.
Because they loved it back then, and that was the price of a Chagall in 1964. So, like, you know, it's things like this. Like, over 50, they've been married for over 50 years, so they bought artwork, a piece of artwork as their anniversary gift every year.
And it just shows, once again, that you don't have to be a millionaire when you're buying. No, but a lot of people have this idea that you have to, that it's... And if you start small...
Well, yeah, like, I'm a fan of collecting in the way of, like, works on paper, I think, is an excellent entry to collecting. Because it's inexpensive, not very... You know, even framing is not very expensive. They don't necessarily... They're not quite as precious, per se. So, like, when you get to collect better or bigger or more expensive, you don't feel so bad taking a work on paper and putting it in a different room or something like this. But, like... I love works on paper, but unfortunately, my wife doesn't love all the artwork I want to put on the walls. So I end up with only like one piece in a room where I would want like nine pieces up in a room. So, you know, there you go. There's a balancing act on that. But I mean, there are lots of like avenues of entry. So like,
yes, and photography is another one where
photography tough market here.
Yes,
like in
everywhere.
Europe. Well, but in Europe, I have found Amsterdam and Paris and London a little bit are pretty good with photography. They have good long traditions because, I mean, of course, photography was made in Paris or London, depending on who you talk to. But Amsterdam also has a very strong history of photography. But outside of there, it's a tough market for photography. And Prague is tough.
Because we have, this Pavel Banka I was telling you about.
I was waiting until after the podcast contact him. Because I wanted to make sure you weren't upset with me.
No. But so you'll like him. He's a great photographer and as well.
Magdalena Blaha.
So going into that, what subject matter, mediums, whatever, what sell well, what don't sell well, what does the market look like right now here?
We're working with two ceramists.
You
can't, because it's, I think what we're presenting, the ceramist.
Yes,
Sharka Radova.
And she's, you know, she has unbelievable pieces, unique pieces, which are very recognizable.
Sculptural, utilitarian?
It's usually figure, but figures she only does. So you if you see it, you know it's her. And she comes from the family of ceramists. So her father was ceramist, her mother was ceramist.
It's extraordinary.
And it's just, it costs nothing.
Yes.
It's porcelain. And it takes her like 4 days to create the one piece, because you bake it, rebake it, paint it, whatever.
Glaze.
And people would come and try to negotiate with us the price.
And you're talking about a couple of hundred euros. Yes. You know, it's... there's another artist that we like very much in this. She does ceramic, Indra Vikova. Mm-hmm. And she's the same. And she does steel with ceramic. And it's...
very abstract, and she started doing it like 40 years ago. So
you go to their house. The husband, Pavel Banka, is the photographer, and she's doing these pieces with this wire
in a way, yes.
And then the ceramic. So it's figures of heads and so on.
Beautiful pieces.
And you go in their house, and they both have their own size of the atelier, and. It's just such a great pleasure to be there, because you're in, like, you don't want to leave. You know,
but on Czech market, unfortunately, ceramic and porcelain, they consider it the same thing. It's nothing.
Because there's so many, and
they don't care.
Glass artists here are very...
Glass are very expensive here, but they're all abroad. No one likes them here.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
Because we have, for instance, Rudolf Berda. He's his biggest market is in Bahrain. The Sheikh of Bahrain is buying his pieces. But we have Vladimir Bahorik, his glass pieces, everything is in the States. Mm. So, you know, or mostly in the States.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I was talking to somebody about this, and this makes sense. Is like those kinds of pieces are things that you buy because of the experience of traveling somewhere. Like if I grew up here in Prague, I wouldn't be buying Prague glass because, well, I live in Prague glass. I see it all the time. It's not there's no personal attachment or memory to it. If I traveled to somewhere and I have a memory of that experience of that travel and I buy a piece of art, it now becomes a tangible memory of a travel. Right. So like, to a certain extent, that's what this international market is sort of doing.
We're talking about like 20... starting from $20,000 piece. You know?
Okay, that's a bit higher than I'm thinking.
It's not souvenir.
It's a heck of a memory.
And like Borek Čipek, you know, Borek Čipek, I mean, he passed away a few years ago, but this man, architect, he did all the changes at the castle with President Havel at the time. So all the anything that you see, the glass chandeliers, the style with the chairs, and they have a little piece, a little knob somewhere. So if you go to the Spanish Hall, it's all his, you know, the chair, everything he's designed. So you look at you know, of course, now if you go to an auction house and you see his pieces, I mean, it's skyrocketed. So
all right, let's go back now, because I don't think we actually answered the question of like, so how do you look for or find artists? Do artists come to you? Do they send you emails?
A few of them do. I would say that that's like 10%. I would say, yes, it's because the people, you know, we'll check some of them out. And but mostly we started with a core group of 10 artists, and out of those 10 artists, it's like you would tell me, oh, okay, I have so-and-so, he's this, I have this friend that's a sculptor, you should really get to know him. And I tell you, the both of us, we do a lot of homework, and, you know, we were like, where's Jakub in the sculpture garden is
Botanicus.
No? Botanicus, you go there. Well, I mean, it's a gold mine for sculpture because you have so many different sculptors that are there. So that's how I saw the piece of Lukasz Rice, for instance. And so Lukasz, I called him and I said, I'd like you to be part of my show. And, you know, and this guy is like, oh my gosh, so happy but so talented. And the same with Andre
Oliva.
They live far away and they're sometimes 3-4 hours from Prague, and you know they're but it's so extraordinary. They're so talented.
Right. And, so most of your artists you get from recommendations from other existing artists, basically.
Or that, you know, that we're looking up or that we find or that we see.
Client can advise, you know, say, look, I know this artist, please contact, like Burda, let's say.
Yes.
Right. So this goes back to the whole sort of beginning part of the handshake and getting to know people kind of thing, which is still what the art world is really based in.
Yes. Because don't forget, most of the artists that we work with they're not in a gallery. They're mostly at home in their studios, working, minding their own business, doing their own thing. And many not motivated by, you know, they're just doing their thing. So they have their own collectors. They have their own little niche. So we've come in and said, look, you know, we'll try and help you or we'll do. And sometimes I'm disappointed by the response, because I think that there's, you know, some artists that are so extraordinary, and I'm thinking, shoot, how come nobody's buying this piece? Because it should be, it's not that the prices are high or that, and it's like, and that I think something that I think for sure is gonna sell. And so sometimes you don't know, huh?
Yes.
Well, I mean, that's interesting. Like, what, you know, when you're, because you work both ends as the gallery, you're literally the middleman in the whole process. Like, you talk with the artists, you talk with the buyers. And so, like, what is the trick? Like, how does it work? Like, how do you get the connection to happen?
You know.
It takes electricity.
I don't.
No, Louise, first of all, Louise would go, if she will meet you and she will say, you need an art at your home. So you say, no, thank you, I have. No, look, this wall needs the painting here. You know, so it's all about...
That scenario assumes that you have access to a collector's home.
Yes, I do.
Yes. And then,
I don't have access to collector's
house. This person wake up one morning and says, oh, she's right, I need a painting here.
Or I need a sculpture.
Little subliminal messaging, yes.
Or you need a sculpture.
Your pool needs some entertainment around, so you need a sculpture for the pool. Yeah. If you don't have access...
No, then you
It's more difficult, much more difficult.
I'm very fortunate, and I say it because really, you know, the friends that we've made, and a lot of them. I mean, one collector that you'll meet, Tony Vavreka. I mean, I was at his house, the most beautiful house, sitting by his pool, and I said, "You would need a sculpture," and this was 2 years ago. And he said, you know, that's a good idea. And I called Jakub Fleischer and I said, Jakub, you go and talk to him. And because it was my first, idea of saying this, and I said, Tony, I'd like you to help me because I'd like to post some pictures and do this. And he said, sure. And because he was a friend, I didn't want to, they just did their deal and that was it. And I said, I'm going to make this a big thing in my on my website to say, look, I've been to a collector's home and look at the beautiful sculpture that was made for this collector.
Commissioned work.
A commissioned work. And so now more and more and more and more homes or people, collectors, are doing this. Exactly. Doing commissioned work. And this, I think, it's tailor-made.
So is this something, do you believe that the Prague Artworks will be able to expand outside of this region? Or is this, are you only staying? I mean, because you have your friends and your friends of friends, and that's lovely. And it's going to sustain you for a little while, but there's going to be a point where you're kind of going to run out of clients.
Yes.
What do you do then?
Well, this is it. I mean, we've already looked at the next show we're going to do in November, we already... are going. We have an artist from Budapest. We have an artist from. We're looking at different options in Europe, to say, okay, let's already look, not just Czech, and then hopefully we'll go and do a BNL, not BNL, but a show maybe in Georgia or in Vienna.
Be part of art fair or something, a small booth, just to expose a
art
little
fairs.
Bit.
Yes. That's a whole...
Well, we have to do something.
Know.
Yeah, that's a whole, boy.
Well, we have to do something because...
They are so expensive.
Yes, but, at the same time, we've got to... Because, we're looking at so many options. We're looking at doing, creating an app. We're creating this. Maybe opening a small gallery. We have so many ideas. And so we know that we want to do something.
I would say stay away from the app. I've seen that happen. I've seen the app idea done before in San Francisco. I was there around the 2000s of the .com and suddenly there was an app made that you could buy art online and it failed miserably. When it comes to that's saying here's an app to buy a car. The kind of money, people are not going to be buying cars on an app. When the money becomes that, when the purchase price becomes over a certain price point, people are not going to do it on an app.
Right.
That's it. So, if you want to sell starter works, less beginning customer, beginning collectors kind of things, maybe that could be an app. Yes, serigraphs and things along this kind of sure, you can absolutely do those, and people will buy those through an app.
Yes.
But they're not going to buy a bronze sculpture or anything like this. There's a maximum price point that people are willing to do without. Hands-on experience with something basic.
Right.
Be careful with that one.
Yes, but
yes,
but we're looking at a lot of things.
We are thinking coming back to the sale part, I was working in a gallery for many years. So what I learned...
Yes, I also want to be sure to go back. What are your backgrounds? We did a little bit of your background.
So you were working in a gallery. I was working in a gallery for 10 years with my dad. So
Who is your dad?
My dad is an artist as well. So I know how artists can be, you know, difficult.
I resent that.
Alexander Onishenko is his name. Yes, his gallery is Gallery Jakubska. It still exists. So it's 25 years old already. So I worked with him for 10 years. And I have to say that... what happens when you sell? Okay, to sell in a gallery, it's easy. Because if person come in the gallery, you can do the magic. Why? Because the people very often buy story. Second, it's people very often buy technique. And, you know, if you say that this artist is famous and, you know, a lot of people have him, so people buy this, you know, popularity kind. So when let's say we have pop-ups, what we'd also do, we do commented tour, which we invite the expats and different kind of people, so they learn about artists. And I have to say that it works. And let's say next time we will try to do it in Russian, maybe in Czech, so people learn about artists. And you say some, you know, story, and every person would click, saying, "Oh, it's so interesting." You know,
that's the thing that I think was most interesting about what you just said, which is that you can sell the story.
Yeah. I mean,
there are so many artists these days that, like, they make a beautiful object, like a stunning piece, and they offer no story with it. Like they just do like a one word title, and they're like, "There
yes,
it is."
Yes.
But it's the story that sells the piece, like whatever it is. It doesn't matter, you know,
yes,
for better or for worse, there has to have a story to it, because otherwise it's simply just decor. Mm. Like it's just graphic design or whatever, but it has to have more of a story behind it. How do you get that story out of the artists?
You've got to talk.
Or do you just make it up?
No. But
artist just, okay, you make up a little bit, maybe, you know. You just exaggerate.
But we're there. We're sitting with these guys. We're, you know, guys or women. But you get to know them. So you have to have
you
that.
You interpolate a story.
You say, oh, you know, he has six wives. And everyone like, wow, I see it in his work, you know. This energy, yes. Yeah. I'm saying, yeah. So it's...
That's illegal in most countries.
But we have that's that human element that we're talking about. I mean, there's some artists that, you know, we've had before that, you know, they come, we don't know that well. And we can see that it doesn't work so well either, because they don't know us that well. And you try them out because you like their work or you think that it's going to sell. But, you know...
You find him boring.
Yes.
And so how you can sell some interesting art, but from boring artists? So there's no story behind it. He just want to sell.
Yeah.
So this is the commercial-oriented artist.
Or they just want to produce a pretty thing.
Or something. Yes,
like, that's
yes,
it. And,
yes.
The artwork ends with pretty thing.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had, you know, I mean, it just happened recently that, you know, we put the piece, because we asked the artist drop everything off, and, you know, we're going to curate it. We're looking after the details, and we don't want to have the artist involved in where it's going to be. And then they'll come and they'll see their piece and they'll say, well, why? Why am I there beside so-and-so? And why is it there? And, you know, so...
What does that matter?
And it's too close to the other guy, and it's too close to this one.
And, you know, they don't pay. So it's, you know, we take the art and we're trying to sell it. So if you pay for the space, okay, you say, I don't like it or whatever. But...
We're doing a lot, and I think that it's a very, very fine line here, because a collector could actually go, and they do, directly to the artist.
To the studio.
And this is probably the biggest, I would say, when you think that you've a trust that you have between somebody that you know, and then they go directly to the artist and have something, they didn't know them before,
they see what we're posting online, and then there's no way of controlling that. There's no way.
Is there no way of? I mean, no. I feel like there are ways of controlling that.
Well, we've got so many artists, and you know, you're not talking. I mean, you might be in a closer contact with 10 or 15, but you're not like calling everybody every week. All, you know, your whole roster.
Okay, that question. So, like, what do you think the magic number, the right number of artists that a gallery should be representing? Because there is a point where it gets too many.
I think that right now we're at a point where we've got to decide which way we're going to go, in the sense that either we're going to do, it's like an art fair, and we're going to have 50 artists. We had 37, and I didn't think it was that difficult to manage at all. But because we're taking, at the same time, say a husband and wife, two sisters together, a father with...
I thought you were going to say a dog.
I know, a father with his son, a father with their daughter. So already, when you take all of that away, you've probably, like that 15 or 16 that are associated with somebody, and then the rest. So I didn't find that so hard to manage, strangely enough. Mm. That side, I don't mind, you know. But what it is this fine line of, you know, do we stay small? And you stay with, you know, we say, okay, we're going to go with 10 artists only. And, you know, 10 artists, and that's it. And they can bring 10 pieces each, and we're going to do the... Or you make it... It's a very hard question.
Yeah. Which begs the question, like, if you had to, so let's say right now you said you have a 37 in your program. So let's say you had to weed it down to 10. How would you choose your 10? Like, what would be the characteristics or the qualities? I mean, like, would you look at past sales, potential sales, trends in the market, past trends in the market, their personalities, the subject matter, the medium, like how easy is it to manage, how difficult is it? Like, you know, what are some of the criteria and the factors that go into the decision of maintaining a relationship or choosing to maintain a relationship with an artist?
Okay, since we are, as Luis was saying, since we're a gallery which not thinking only about the profit, but as well as helping artists, that would be very difficult for us. Because there are some artists which we didn't sell yet anything, but we would like to help, you know, because they're good.
But you're not a charity. Don't act like you're not in it for some amount of money. You need money to stay open. So you need a certain amount of money. So that's fine. It's a business. Yes. Don't be ashamed of it.
But this is how Lisa started. I mean, she was helping artists even before the business.
Yes.
And she was doing it.
And I never took a penny.
But it's still not a charity.
Yeah.
No, right.
Which maybe you could do that. An NGO might actually be a good way. Like you could then
so
get,
what we
you
can do is
sponsored
we can
by
stay,
the municipality.
Yes. This also, yeah. Yes. Well, because we are sponsored also by someone. So what we can do, maybe we can have two stages. So we can have a commercial artist, which we know we sell, and we can have once a year show for young artists. You know, so you there's many possibilities. Since we do the pop-ups several times a year.
So you're not willing
to
cut anybody.
Oh, well, we will
have
and
to.
And we do cut people on the way, but for different reasons, of course. You know, for, you know, personal reasons, so because it's difficult to work with some certain artists.
I was gonna say, so like as a sort of a tutorial for artists, basically, like what are some things that have caused problems that have made you say we don't want to work with you anymore?
Well, first, I would say the basic manners of saying thank you very much after, you know, doing a show, printing a catalog, you know, picking up your artwork, bringing it back to your studio. I would say a thank you would be, and a lot of them don't even...
How elaborate a thank you? Like literally just thank you or like flowers?
No, kind of... you don't have to, but just to say, you know what? And to send you an email or to say to you, look, thank you. I appreciate very much. I think that it's elementary, but you'd be surprised how many do not.
Oh, no, I would not be surprised.
And so when I don't get any thanks, I'm very skeptical, and I, you know, we have these long conversations with Elena because it's like, you know, I'm not interested. It's like I lose a little bit of, you know, and I know business is business, but I need the thank you
feedback, you know, some kind of yeah. feedback, because you do your work, and many times we did an exhibition and we were not that successful, let's say, and you say, okay, we went through all this organization and everything, and people are like, oh, whatever,
and you're spending thousands of dollars, and you know, you're just saying, okay, well, you know, so,
and they wouldn't even show up for a show, and you know, during the all 2 weeks we are in a space, they wouldn't come just to see how it is.
Yeah,
and,
to say hello. So I'm, you're less in tune of, you know, continuing with them. So I would say to an upcoming artist, or even to an assassin, like, you know, you've got to appreciate the fact that if you're asked to participate, that you're there, that if you say, okay, send me this work, that you send it, that you respect the deadlines of what we need.
Those are just professionalism.
I know, but but the thing is what you're looking at basics is sometimes, you know, you're running around, you're trying to make our certificate, you know, to hand over certificates. And I mean, you're running around. And, you know, we had a huge problem not long ago because, you know, you're rushing. And we had a wrong price on a piece of art. And then what do you do? And then it's a huge problem, because then, you know, you've got to go back to the you know, to your client, to your loyal collector, to say, I'm really, really sorry, but it's no longer what the price I told you.
Yeah, sorry, it wasn't 700, it was 7,000.
Yes, but that's basically a little bit what. So and you know, you don't feel in a. You don't feel in a good state when you have to do something like that. So everything is a learning process as well. But
You mentioned something really briefly in there, certificates. This is something that's only been coming up recently for me that I've noticed a lot. I would say recently, like the past decade, that certificates of authenticity and things along this line are very important. Now they've become okay, now, very important.
We have two kind of certificates. So one is certificate which it's like confirmation for us and for artists that we have this piece. And in case we're selling this piece, it goes to our accounting. So accountant knows how much we paid in a way, because all the money goes through us. So how much is our profit and how much tax?
I was about to say, I want to be clear, like you have an accountant then, right?
Yes. So. And the second thing is that because we insure all the pieces. So that's the other thing, is we've never been without insurance.
That's expensive.
Yes, it is.
So I mean, I've done this before, like event insurance, because also when you include alcohol, suddenly the price of the insurance goes up.
No, but we're doing it mostly, you know, with all the pieces. So if we have 100 pieces, last time we had over 100 pieces. So it's but I would, you know, we want to do it. We want to have peace of mind that it's not for theft, because that there wouldn't be any. But it's for if. God forbid a fire or water damage.
A drunk person with a knife. Yeah, I mean, it happens.
I mean, it happens. So, you know, at a cocktail party, we had an incident that a sculpture fell because a guy was drunk and, you know,
I was actually at Prague Art and I watched somebody spill some red wine on a painting by accident.
Oh,
luckily the painting was red, so it was fine.
Yeah, okay.
It's fine. Add a twist on it.
It was an acrylic painting. It came right off, but it was just sort of funny that to see red wine spilled on a red painting. But anyways. Yeah.
So, and then we make this certificate of authenticity, which we make only in a case when we sell the art. So we don't do it forever, because we last time we had over 100 pieces, so it's impossible to do it. So we do it when we sell, then we, you know, it's signed by author and it has all the details there.
Yes, actually,
and it's
here. Hold
it's
on.
It's necessary in a way.
I brought you all a gift. Everybody that's on the podcast, I give a gift of a piece of art. So here, you each get a piece of art. And I wrote, beautiful. And there's certificates of authenticity on the back. So that's why I thought this was like, the right time.
Okay.
You can switch them. They're two different pieces. You
look
can,
at that.
Nothing personal, but which one you got.
You know, I have to tell you that when you told me last time that you were having difficulty selling your pieces in Prague,
yeah.
I went on your website to have a look, and I thought you had absolutely beautiful things, Matthew. So I don't know why. So I think
I don't know why either. And that's part of what's making me do this podcast. Is like there is something. There's a trick, a thing that I'm missing. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the right connections, the right people, the right parties, the right whatevers. But there's some. I can't seem to get to the right.
Well,
whatever.
But we're going to help you there.
But wait, this is a little hologram sticker, and there's a matching hologram sticker on the print itself.
And where did you get it? I want it also.
I ordered it online. There's a place you can order them by like the thousands for like
$20.
They do matching hologram numbers. So they're numbers. And then I have a database at home that has all these numbers in it well.
Yes.
So my records will show that these were donated to you all as a
very
gift for this.
Thank you very much. So, that's very nice. Mm. Very, very nice.
And you say you're not a business person. This is very business oriented thing.
Yes.
You see? Because what as a business, the most important in business is documentation.
Well, I learned that years ago when I was my first job out of college. I worked at a stock photography agency back in the day where it was slides, and they would have just like filing cabinets full of slides, and we would have to go through thousands and tens of thousands of images to try and find an image that a client might want to buy. And we had to obsessively document where that slide was at all times. Was it in a drawer? Was it on somebody's table that they were about to work with? Did it get shipped out to somebody? And then we had to create a database of like if I'm trying to find, our example was always like, if I'm trying to find a picture of a grandmother and a young child in a kitchen looking happy, where would I look? And because we would have thousands of files to try and find, and we would have to figure that out. So like early on in my career, I got obsessive about being very organized in that way. Like if you ever want to find a piece of my artwork, I can tell you where it is.
Okay.
Like, that is not a problem.
So everything is an experience. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, I hated that job, and I hated my boss to the point that I left just to go back to school, just because he was such a horrible boss. But on the other hand, I made some very good friends who are still my friends to this day. So
that's good.
Yeah, there's a trade-off on that.
Yes.
You learn a lot of things over the course of your life. Sometimes whether they're directly relevant or not is a different question. Like, I mean, I've had random jobs, like all this audio recording knowledge that I have for as far as doing this podcast. It all came from when I was a roadie, where I used to tour around with rock and roll bands doing their lights and sound.
So that's amazing.
What band?
I was a roadie between New York City and Washington, D.C. for any band that toured between there. My home base was the 930 Club in Washington, D.C. And so anybody that toured. So Lenny Kravitz, Beastie Boys, Porno for Pyros, Pearl Jam, whatever. Like we did festivals. I did like the Tibetan Freedom Festival, the WHFS festivals, like all kinds of stuff. So I've got all kinds of interesting stories.
Yeah,
lots of stories.
Yeah.
lots of people's things that they don't want getting out into public. But I dealt with a lot of this equipment before. So like this was not such a leap for me to suddenly want to do this kind of thing.
I think you will be very successful.
I hope so.
Yes.
The idea of this podcast is to try to, like, I feel I'm 46 years old and I have made many mistakes in my life. I'm not saying I'm perfect. As a matter of fact, I'm horribly imperfect in so many ways, as my wife points out.
But
we're not here to judge my wife. I'm horribly imperfect and I made lots of mistakes in my career. Like, I just had a student that asked me, he said, are you a successful artist? And I just laughed and I was like, oh no, I'm so not a successful artist. And they're like, why not? And I was like, if I knew the answer to that, I would be a successful artist.
But I think there's doubt in many artists, like that, even, you know, even this,
doubt myself,
our
successful
ones. I think that there has to be something, because that's what keeps them going every day and painting every day. Most of them do something every single day.
Oh yeah,
I think that that's so extraordinary.
Oh, I had one of my old friends, Sean Richards. He's this great painter in New York. In, I don't know where he is living these days, but he was in North Carolina, then New York. But his thing was, he went to his studio 9 a.m. every day, and he left at 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. every day. He didn't take his work home. He didn't think about work when he was at home. He went to work.
Yes,
which was making his art from 9 to 5. Now, I mean, don't get me wrong, he didn't paint, literally have a paintbrush in his hand from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m., but he was in the studio thinking about art, producing art, researching art, doing whatever. It was his job.
Yes. Well, we work with many
very,
like that.
And he's very successful in that way. And like, I would love that.
Yes.
But I need money to support my household. Yes. So it's like, if I could find a way, and I mean, as I said, like, this is sort of the point, but this, not just for me, but for everybody who's listening, is how do you find a way to make enough money to be able to devote your time to it without the stresses of other things drawing you away?
So what I would do as an artist, let's say, if I would be an artist, I would definitely work, I mean, partly with my, I mean, I would have art as a big hobby, let's say. And then,
my wife still to this day calls my art my hobby.
No, but you call it this way, but you need work for specifically the skills, you know. You can go work as a designer, you can go work as an interior designer. I mean, if you artist, you have very big perspective. So you can be in anything what's connected to craft, art, anything.
Well, see, that's a fine line, because I found, historically, like Charles Bukowski, let's take a crazy author. Do you know him?
No.
He's crazy. Mm-hmm. He's literally insane. No. But he wrote these magnificent books, utterly insane, crazy stuff. But during the day, he worked as a post office employee. Most mundane, silly thing that used none of his creativity. So when he got home and on the weekends, he was super creative because he didn't have to expend any of that energy at work. Mm. And then, of course, there are lots of people these days who basically try to take their thing that they're trained in, their passion, and find basically some other thing that's similar enough to it that they feel like they're being able to use their education or their creativity. But a lot of times it sort of sucks their life out of them. And by the time they get home to make their own stuff, they've already expended all their creativity at work.
I don't know. But let's say my father, when he was a young artist, he was an artist, because artist is something you feel inside you. So you could not be
something else.
So he was doing what? We're talking about communistic era, Soviet Union then. So he was doing Lenin's faces. As an artist, he was doing museums, communistic museums, some order, because the only order for artists you can get from communistic party. So it can be, you know, this or that. And he says, look, I was an artist. I had my small studio. I was painting whatever I want, but I had a job. Because even then, artist is also a job.
It is a job.
You know, so it's not only that you come to your studio, you paint and you create new styles. You have to go out and sell it. So three times a week, and three times a week you paint, but three times a week you do a promotion for your artwork. So you go to all the galleries, you just knock in every door and say, look, make a leaflet, go to postcard company, says, please take it, I'll give it for free. Just expose it. This is a job of the artist then.
Oh, it still is to this day. But I've been here for a year and a half now, I think. And I've done a decent job of going around to meeting people and talking to people and things like this. And the one primary thing that I get here, the most common response I get is, oh, we only represent Czech and Slovak artists. Like, that is by far the most common response I get. And I've even had to the point where, like, a gallery one time said, I love your work, I recommend you going to Berlin.
Yes, you said, but at the same time, for instance, the U.S. Embassy have a program.
Yes, yes. I love their program. So, yes, I ran into it when I was in the UAE. Yes. I love their program. I hope, do you know somebody there? Because I would love to talk to somebody about that program for the podcast.
Yes, yes.
Like, because I think that that program is fabulous and I wish more people knew about it.
Yes.
They had amazing work.
Find a contact for you.
They had amazing pieces in the Abu Dhabi embassy. Oh, it was so great. I was so impressed with that.
For example, why don't you approach, it's okay, you're an American artist.
I am an American artist.
So why don't you approach Czech Republic from different ways? So why don't you make a series of some photos or art which is connected to Czech, so now it's demonstrations, so why don't you, you know, so in get involved with Czech Republic from deep and then say, look, I'm American, but look how I see what's going on in your country. So why
as
don't
an example,
as an example, example, yes,
it's a valid idea. I'm not I will personally say no to that, but it's a valid idea.
Yeah, so it's, you know, so you, when you're in a country, what you try to do, you always go to local things. So as any expat, so you learn. You
the Czech Center, for instance, we have friends that have had exhibitions.
I'm sorry,
there.
The Czech Center. What?
Czech Center.
That's it. Just this, Czech Center.
Yes.
Okay.
They have foreigners that come and do exhibitions.
I've never. Oh wait, Czech Center. Oh. I do know
next
that.
To next to Erste Bank, you pronounce
it's a little bit it's Street? Out the out the yellow line, right?
No, no, it's right here in the center.
In the center,
I can't pronounce it. So, you know, next to Erste,
but I don't know which one. Erste.
Havelka Market.
Havelskitter.
I think I follow them on I follow them on social media, but I haven't actually been to anything they've done, but anyways, but I don't, it's not about the point about like being particular, but it's like, how do, okay, so back to choosing your artists, like, so how do you choose them? So like, okay, so you've got, you had your first set of them and then you get recommendations from people, but like, even when you go to the recommendations, like, you know, it's
a gut feeling.
That's the thing. It's like it goes through like, okay, but like, is it the work? Like, because this is one of the pet peeves that's going on, because like I do reviews literally before I came here. I do portfolio reviews online for Lens Culture. And I have to tell people, you make beautiful images, but you also have to write an artist statement. You have to explain it, give it some context, give it the story, whatever it is that you want to call it. And they all get angry with me all the time. They're all like, well, but why do I need to write all this? If I wanted to be a writer, I would have, you know, wouldn't have been a photographer.
But you need to. Like, there's nothing that goes, and it's the same when we're choosing. There's more than one element. But of course, the element of, I mean, we have taken pieces that we both don't like. But the thing is that the artist is so wonderful and so, like, a larger than life personality, that we will, it trumps it. So it's and we know that there are buyers there that will buy this kind of brutal art, if I could call it like that. So
I don't know the art in particular.
So it's you know, like dark and strange. So, but you have a following of people that love like this kind of
artwork I own.
You know, yeah. So, okay. See, yes. So you know, it's not all happy.
Who says artwork has to be happy?
No. But you know what I mean. Like, it's not. We're looking at pieces that you think, okay, well, this is going to be nice in your living room and maybe it's going to be sellable. We're looking at, you know, a whole package. It's a whole package. It's, you know, well, other people like it. We like it, but, you know, and it's a gut feeling of...
okay, so within that realm, let's go to like sort of like, how about this? What kind of scale seems to be the most marketable, let's say, because there is a certain size where it's like almost too big for the average customer. I mean, of course, there will always be people with massive homes and spaces.
But we did a show only big pieces. only massive pieces.
And how did that? Okay.
Yeah. But
You said, you said that your pop-up exhibitions have all been very successful. What's this matrix for successful that you all are using? So how do you define that?
So let's say, if you take a percentage, let's say, so first of all, we covered the cost.
Excellent.
And we
start.
Made the money. Not much, but this is the
in
even
the,
even
in
if
the
we
arts,
covered the
cover
cost,
the cost is good.
Yeah, if we even only covered the cost, it's success.
Okay.
Because we are a new company, we are trying, you know, we see the more we are on the market, the more people know about us. So it always takes some time to make a name
for yourself.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I mean the arts market generally is worth 10 years just to be able to say you've been around.
Yes,
I mean,
so you know that's why we say, look, if we cover or even if we don't cover all, but we are very little, under. It's success.
Okay, so that's your matrix.
Yes,
that's fine,
yes.
That's good.
And it's successful, yes.
I mean, a young, under 3-year-old company being able to just even not be in the red is more or less a successful company, in my opinion.
That's what we think. And on top of that, that you have recognition in some way that people are interested and, you know. We see it on social media for sure. Mm-hmm. So, and that's very encouraging. So,
did we finish up with social media? Did you talk about how useful it is, how successful
it
is?
It's very useful, but for now, I mean, we attract a lot of artists by our Instagram because, you know, artists usually, you know, also search by, you know, online platform, online gallery. So we have a lot requests in a way from artists all over the world, but since we're only Czech based, we don't really, you know, take in consideration. We always polite to them, but we for now we're like this. But social media, we're trying to be active there. So, and if it will bring us some feedback, the feedback is good from people we know. So they say, look, I look at you and, you know, it's always something fresh, always something different, small video, photo, you know, very live. So we really use Instagram how it should be used. So we go to visit artists, we post the, you know, we will do a postcard today, we will post a photo today. Yeah. So we, you know, we show people what we do, you know.
Very happy I wore my nice new shirt.
Yes.
That's good. I was gonna wear a t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
And the other thing that's good is that we work with Leaders Magazine, and they're in the Czech Republic and in Slovakia. And they have been like a partner with us since we've started. So every time we do a pop-up, they do 2-3-page spread. And this has been a very great tool because it's a working tool for us.
That brings up a point that the partnerships, basically.
Yes.
Creating more relationships, basically. So,
yes.
But creating business partnerships is very important.
Yes. And so this magazine, I mean, it's read by a lot of business people and embassies and so on. This has been a good tool for us. Now, of course, we need to expand it to, say, some Czech newspapers or TV. Like,
Prima.
You know, exactly, whatever. But, you know, to go another step and get into the Czech market, like really inside. But, I mean, it will come.
Because we all our catalogs and website is in English. So this is the, you know, so
this is one of them.
I
saw the PDF of this on your website.
So we will try to go inside the Czech market, but for Czech people who speak English. So we would not translate it into Czech necessarily, which maybe a lot of people wouldn't like. But
one of the big things, of course, is the of piercing into the market. Like, I think that was the main,
Since we didn't pierce in yet, we could not share the experience, you know. So we being an expat-oriented gallery, online gallery, and suddenly we have to you know, get into the Czech market where Czech, only Czech people are, we're still in the process of doing it. So we're not there yet. So we could not really,
it's tough,
share the experience. And I don't know if it's possible. I think it's possible, but it will take time.
It seems like the art market in this region seems very insulated. Like they stay to themselves. They're not super interested in outside participants and outside, even outside collectors. I mean, they'll take anybody's money, I'm sure, but they're not actively seeking it. Like, they're fine with just dealing locally and regionally, and that's enough.
Because it's not very, there are expat community here, but not big. So it's not, you know, like multicultural city, Prague, or country.
Really? I feel like it's very multicultural.
Well,
you know, because you are
yeah,
around.
Because I'm an expat, so I hang out with the multicultural people.
It is, but not like we talk, okay, London is huge, but if we say that, you know, Prague is a capital city, there are a lot of students and expats, but not that many that would say.
No, you're right. There really are.
And at a level that, you know, like we're inviting really a nice group of people, like say to our opening, we'll have 200 people, for instance, 250 people. And I mean, it's a top level that we're looking at. But, you know, you keep inviting the same people. And, you know, if somebody bought like 3 months ago, you're not expecting them to buy again. So that's what your question of before.
Yeah.
We need to go out. We need to, visitors that are coming here, people that are coming for a first time to Prague and that are collectors, I don't know where they go. Because a lot, you know,
well,
they come
at the
here
moment
on a week.
They don't come to you because you don't have a gallery.
No, but even the ones that do, but a lot of them are closed on the weekends. It's not like it's like if you're coming, it's not like it's easy, accessible. Oh, where do I go and buy contemporary art? Because it's an underworld, it's underground world here.
Not only is it an underground thing, but it's, I feel like the galleries and the museums, whatever you want to call them here, are sort of bickering amongst themselves, because like some of them are in Žižkov, some of them are in Prague 7,
so no,
some of them are in downtown Prague 1. Like, well, don't get me wrong, if it were all in one neighborhood, that would probably be boring. But like they are actively saying like, oh no, we're better. Oh no, we're better. Like they're actively sort of.
But there's some very good galleries. There are some very good museums. We're lucky that there are some. But it's like, you know, I'm just saying somebody, because if you go to other cities, it's a little bit easier.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
And I think that there's, I mean, I would certainly like to get into that niche market, and that's something that we're working on, but it needs, you know.
So what is that next step that, you know, because I'm thinking if a gallerist is listening and they're in the same sort of position as you, like what is the thing that you're thinking is the next step? I mean, obviously you don't know whether
well,
it's successful.
Well, I do know, but I don't want to tell you because, because the thing is that everybody's taking your, no, yes. But you know, it's, I know what I'm going to do. But
and now I'm trying to figure out how to coax it out of you.
Yes, well, I think I could, even if I told you, but it's, but we, because you have, I mean, I don't know how many thousands of visitors, and you're thinking how many hundreds of collectors are coming, and there are missed opportunities
everywhere, every day.
Every day,
opportunities.
That's it. So, and
how do you get to them?
Well, I know
hotels.
We both do.
Hotels.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I knew that was good. But I've seen that. That's pretty common around Prague. I've seen a number of hotels that have a gallery, basically, that has been supplying the artwork to decorate the hotel.
Well, no, but a lot of them, it's been bought by the hotel.
The galleries will loan them to the hotel.
Okay, because there are a lot, like at the Four Seasons Hotel,
Four Seasons.
Well, yeah,
Four Seasons.
No, but they were, everything was bought.
As they should be, the Four Seasons.
It's to promote local art as well.
Sure, but no, I know some local...
They're not buying Canadian art. They're buying Czech art.
I've seen probably three hotels that I know of here that are basically, there's artwork on loan from the gallery on display with a tag from the gallery a contact to be able to purchase from the gallery, basically. So, and oddly enough, while I was even sitting in the lobby, somebody said, "Hey, do you have a phone so I can call about this artwork?" Buying a piece of art that they saw in the lobby of the hotel.
I think it's 4 years old, they print out the art map.
I've seen the art map since the first day I came to Prague.
It's not map where the old gallery are listed, because you have to pay to be in the map.
What?
As an art gallery.
So it's a commercial thing. So let's say we're not there. Okay, if we would have a space. So say my father gallery is not there because it costs a certain amount of money.
I had no idea.
And this means that if person gets this art map, so it goes to certain galleries only. And so it's not really an art scene of Prague, you know? So it's a...
I've always loved art map. You've now burst my bubble on art map.
Of course. Why they would print it for free? Tell me.
I assumed it was sponsored by the government or something. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I'm naive like that.
It should
like
be,
that.
Maybe. But, you know, government here doesn't support even the artist, because this ceramist we talked about earlier, she was struggling to get support from government to make an exhibition of the old generation. So it was like 30 artists, because she's a head of this group or what, organization.
Yeah, a guild or something.
Yeah. Whatever, something like this.
I love the term
guild. Government gave them, imagine, 30 artists were exhibiting, they gave them space.
All older, 70.
30,000 crowns, so which is 1,000 euro.
1,500 euros. I mean, where are you going to go with that?
To print catalog, to deliver all the things there, to have some kind of reception.
Do you want to know really where you go from there? Is you then go to a private sponsor and say, "Look, I got the government to give this much.
I know how to leverage that to then get more money.
That's all it is. I mean, my background in the United States, I used to run a nonprofit in the United States, an NGO or whatever, and it's always like, when you go to somebody like the government, or quite honestly, if you go almost anywhere, like any amount of money that somebody's willing to give you as a sponsorship or a partnership is really just money that you then turn around and leverage to get more money. Mm-hmm. Like that's what it's meant for. No one sponsor, or rarely, if ever, is that one sponsor expecting to be 100% sponsor. Mm-hmm. It's always matching grants, huge, huge buzzword in the US, matching grants.
Yes, but it doesn't exist here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a buzzword here. It's not.
It's not a Czech word.
Well,
either.
No, it's not in the DNA here yet.
Yeah, so, but I mean, it wasn't in the DNA when it started back then. But now, 15 years later, 20 years later, now it's completely normal. The idea of matching funds, basically.
Yes, of course. It's. But even what you're talking about, I think it will happen.
I've got some last questions that I ask everybody, but last question based on what you're talking about. As a general whole, does it feel like the market in this region is still a little behind the average of the world? Like, I mean, it feels like it's a little bit behind the times.
Well, it's a good thing, because the market value is still below. So people that are buying are getting a very good price.
Okay.
For some well-known artists.
So this is still an emerging market, basically.
It's still an emerging market. And if you have a bit of money, like, you know, we have some artists that, you know, you buy And these guys, I mean, you know, they've been in museums all over the Czech Republic. Because of their age, because of, you know, their position, if you want, they're extremely talented. I'd say, you know, I would put some money on that horse and say, nice. You know what? Yeah, for sure. And because it's below. It's just below.
It's still affordable.
I stated it in a pessimistic kind of way, and you're turning it into an optimistic kind of way.
Well, because I am.
Yeah,
so, yes. Yes.
I try to define myself as a realist more than a pessimist, but I mean, okay. So basically, like this region, as you know, because I mean, I could imagine Hungary and Croatia and Poland and sort of all the places sort of around us are probably still the same way.
No, different. I think that Poland they have a different market.
Really?
And I think that their contemporary artists and contemporary galleries are at another level.
Interesting.
Yes,
okay.
I would think. Yes. So. And Vienna, of course, is different.
Oh, and
so,
Berlin, yeah.
Yes, and Berlin.
Yeah, I was looking east with my similar feel.
But maybe Bucharest or...
in Ukraine, it's very difficult because also there are so many artists and just...
Not a lot of buyers.
No. There are buyers, but for $300, it's expensive.
All right, so my last questions that I ask everybody, because the overall sense of the idea of this podcast is that I want to, okay, I have two things. I have a quantifiable and a qualifying, okay? Quantified is I want to learn enough about how the art world works that I can get a work of mine to be exhibited in the Museum of Modern Art in New York. What would your recommendation be? I don't, not the end to the end of the final, but like, a step in the direction to get to that goal.
Well, plane ride.
Won't work. That's the thing. I could show up at their offices. They're not going to do it. So, like, from a professional level, what's something professionally that I could or should do to sort of position myself to be able to have a piece in the Museum of Modern Art in New York? In their collection, because anybody can almost get in the collection. Mm. You can just donate something. I know that. Exhibited.
So what I would do, I would be a part of some scandal, of some something big.
Yeah, I've always said that I want to be arrested for my artwork, because it would be great. Yeah. Great. For business.
Or you make some experiment. So you say I go to leave whatever, like I mean all this you know, this how they make they present there are differently. This Marina,
yes,
this
Abramovich,
yes. Something like this, but with your art in a way. So you go and paint naked on the Wall Street or whatever. I don't know.
Yves Klein did that,
and you will be arrested for it. So yes. I'm sure you know the magazine will write about you.
Yes. Well, okay, all right. So,
more conservative.
I'll go with publicity. So yes. Publicity. Yes. We'll go with that. Yeah. So publicity. So try to get an article written.
I think the good old fashioned way, and I think being persistent, talking. And everyone says it doesn't work. But it's worked for me. And
I'm not going to say it doesn't work, but it takes a long time.
You know what? Persistence pays off. And I've always, always said that, because so many people, they just say, you know what? It's not worth it. I don't feel like it. I don't want to put the time. But when you're persistent, I say it because all my life I've been persistent through, and it's got me, sure, I want to say, but I think that you have to be, and if you want it so much, you're going to get it.
Yeah, well, recently I actually had one of my professors from my undergraduate on social media, on Facebook, write to me and just say, it's so nice to see you're still working.
Good. That's it.
Because I graduated this little tiny school with only 4 other people in my major. And all the other 3 people are not making artwork anymore. Okay, I'm literally the only person that graduated that year that's still making art.
So that's already a big thing. So persistence. See, so.
But for artists, I think it's because artists are very, you know, they are very self-question people. Mm. So if the moment, even knowing, even the successful artists, if they have some, you know, they don't sell for 3-4 months, they feel, you know, depressed, and yes, they feel that that's it, it's over. So how you can be persistent if you don't feel appreciation, you know? So when you are persistent in a way that you just don't see the wall, you just go. But it takes a character.
It takes a character, mm, yes.
So.
And many of the artists, they'll make a lot of money. Like say this month, they'll make a lot of money. And for the next 3 months, it's going to be dry. Mm. And then how do you live?
Which then was actually my other question, yes, my other final question is what kind of recommendation or encouragement would you give to an artist or anybody in the arts world? So it's not particularly an artist in this case, about how to create what I will call a sustainable living. So making enough money to continue to do what you want to do.
$1 million question, because yes, it's... Mm. Because here, many artists that we work with are living day to day from their art, and
are they living the lifestyle they want to be living, or are they living...
Well, they've made it, you know, maybe their spouse is working as well, but if you're living with an artist, like practically everybody we know, I mean, it's
they pay teachers, yes, so poorly here, it's not,
yeah, I know, fun. But yes, but at least you have 15,000 crowns of income, you have this, I mean, it's this.
Wait, you think teachers get paid 15,000 crowns?
Huh. I don't know. Yes, mm-hmm.
I teach here.
No,
I know that it's less? Like, you know, 200 per hour or something. I don't know what's what you can. But I know that Banka and Vikova, they're teaching. So they have some theater club. I mean, I don't think these
but
people
don't
are living
but not
a, on
but
a high.
Not every sure artist not. Is a good teacher. There's yes, a balance. Yes. So like, not every artist can
back,
be a teacher.
I mean, you know, you're making a living. You're putting food on the table. You're... You know, when you're at like an artist, you can sit down, have a cup of coffee, have a glass of wine, enjoy your time.
So basically, marry rich is what you're saying.
Yeah, but that doesn't. It's not there. There's no. Yeah. There's nobody. And because it's not. There's nobody that's motivated. They're motivated to and to have ends meet, but it's not to become a. I mean, there's very few, I would say, David Cherney, or, you know, that his pieces are over, you know, €1 million or whatever. But you're not the new contemporary artists here. There are very few that are making over €1 million a year.
Oh, that's outrageous. No, I mean, I'm just talking just like... For me, like if I sit back, because like my wife and I, of course, have had this conversation numerous times, like how much is enough? What's the thing? And my thing is that like, I want to be comfortable,
yes,
and I simply want to not have to worry about money.
Right. Mm. Well, we all do.
That's
right?
It. Yeah. Yes. I mean, that's the yes goal.
And you know, so and it's not what you're used to too.
It's not being yes an international famous artist. It's not being a or gallery or anything like this. It's not about like being like the best in the world. And, you know, I don't want to need to be a Saatchi or a Gagosian or anything like this. It's just how do you make enough to not have to worry about?
But at the same time, you want to be successful in your own domain. You would want to be well respected. You want to be, you know, you want to have all the
and
the,
you would hope that those all go hand in hand.
Yes, yes.
But they don't.
No, and you don't want to be a son of a bitch getting up there, like, you know, because
yeah, son of a bitch who's rich.
Yes, because that's what a lot of, you know, I don't want to be that person.
There
not
are lots of people in the world that do want to be that
yeah
person.
Yeah, but
and unfortunately, they're going to crush the people
yeah
who
and
don't
I'm not
want
interested
to be that person.
So go right ahead. You know, I like this. I mean, the speed is going right now. you know, we're going up that elevator.
Sure. Well, it's the rabbit and the hare kind of whole mm-hmm. thing. So like,
yeah. So
is it rabbit? No, tortoise and the hare. Tortoise and the hare.
But you know, we know some artists who had not job, but let's say Peggia had a restaurant.
Yes.
So you're an artist, but you have a business. You know, you manage to build a business. You have, again, I'm saying, get a job, you know, and make your art when you are comfortable on your feet, in a way. So you say there's some thing. Income.
I'm sitting around right now. Like, I don't have a lot of work to do. I work online. I work for a university online. I work for Lens Culture online. So like, my life is not horribly structured, and I don't have a lot of exhibitions, and I don't have a lot of, and I don't have all these things to do. And I find that busyness begets busyness, and laziness begets laziness.
Absolutely. Yes. So absolutely.
Like,
that's why you have to move every day.
But that's the thing, is like, yeah. I'm not busy in my work life mm-hmm. because like, there are very limited jobs for me here, and I have as many jobs as I feel like I can get outside right now. But and I don't have any other opportunities. So like, it's like laziness begets laziness and busy. Like, when I'm busy, I'm happy, and I'm busy, and I'm busier. Like, as soon as it's one of those things, like, as soon as you start to get busy, yeah. you suddenly get exponentially busier.
Yes.
And as soon as you start to get lazy, you start to get exponentially lazier.
I wish I'd never been on the other side. But now we're busy.
We're busy.
But
it doesn't
sounds good. It sounds no. good, but no, no,
but yeah, you being expat here, I would start from expat community. So what yes. you do, where the expat community goes. So there are a lot of places where you can meet expats, you know, and just socialize, you know. You
see,
just,
the irony is that I'm from America, and my general opinion is I'm not a huge fan of Americans. If I was a fan of an American, I would be in America. So I am an expat because I don't want to be in America. So why would I want to hang out with Americans?
No, but you wouldn't. But not
you need Americans.
It's true. Yeah, there are lots of Canadians and Brits.
No, but everything. People. It's not. I would say that there are not.
It's just always funny to me. Like, when people are like, "You're an expat, just go hang out with other expats." I'm like, "But if I wanted to hang out with those people, I would have stayed in my country."
Yeah, but the expat, I don't think that it's that American here.
No, it's not.
It's actually everything else.
Yeah, there's a lot of Brits here.
But no, but every country from the EU, for instance, or from you know, but Americans, I don't think that that's not a big there's some, but it's not.
Yeah, we're a small percentage by far.
I mean,
far,
in 2002, there were thousands, but it's gone. Those numbers have gone completely.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, so there are less American expats?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Now,
yes, because they've been replaced by Czechs, and. Because before, there were many expats doing the jobs of Czechs.
Interesting.
Because now Czechs speak good English.
Yes. And
so they don't really need the, you know.
So engineers, IT, everything. So, you know, all these jobs. So there's less and less, and more Czechs.
And for Americans,
it's
very difficult to get, you know, permission here to stay. It's more difficult.
I'm married to a Czech woman. Makes it easy.
Yeah, so this is easy, yes. Yeah. But if you come to work here, it's pain in the ass.
I've heard this. Yeah. Okay.
So, well, thank you.
Yeah, and, thank you very much.
And thank you very much. And I would just say for everyone that's listening out there to visit our Prague Artworks website.
Which we will put a link to in the description of the podcast.
Yes, thank you very much. And thank you, Matthew, for being such a great interviewer.
Thank you for taking the time on a lovely Saturday afternoon. It's not too hot.
No.
Thank you for listening. If you have any questions for me or any questions or comments that you want me to discuss with future guests, please send me an email at matt@wisefoolpod.com, WISEFOOLPOD.com. Ask them on our website, wisefoolpod.com, or any of our social media profiles on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at wisefoolpod. I look forward to hearing from you in the near future and assisting you in gaining more understanding of the contemporary visual art market.